Hey there! Pull up a chair next to Dee Fish, speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. As he spends a few minutes chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, writers, artists, salespeople, and executives, they might discuss their favorite craft brews, or the cutting edge of business technology, or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So, grab a glass and join us for beer, beats, and business.
You are never too old to start. Whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, just because you've been doing one thing for so long doesn't mean that you can't start doing something else.
That was Ryan Roten, host of the Brand New You podcast and overall personal branding expert. I'm David J.P. Fisher, but everyone just calls me D. Fish. And welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Fantastic, David. How are you, sir?
I am living the dream. Thanks for asking. And today's a pretty good dream, so that's good.
That is good.
Absolutely. So let's start off with this. Why do you love whiteboards?
Interesting question, and it's a very simple answer. I'm a very visual person, so you could explain to me, say for example, networking for hours, and we could sit at a bar and you could talk to me all about networking. But if you could draw it out for me, I'll understand it in a quarter of the time. And it's just the way I've always been. If there's a complex problem or situation or somebody wants to explain something to me, it's just much easier for them and me to go in front of a whiteboard and write it all out. I think whiteboards also help me think, so I kind of think visually. I'm actually sitting at a desk doing this podcast interview at a desk that I have painted with whiteboard paint.
That's awesome. I've never heard that before.
Well, and I use it because when I do podcast interviews, if a guest says something as they're giving me an answer that catches my attention, I don't want to interrupt them, so I write down on my desk, because it's a whiteboard desk, what it is that captured the attention, and then I can circle back to it later. And then I also, if I'm just sitting here working or editing a podcast and some idea pops in my head, it's just easy for me to grab a pen and write it on the desk so I don't have to, stop what I'm doing and get up and go to my whiteboard, which is 5 feet away from me.
Sure. So what a great idea for one of the listeners who owns a coffee house. Paint all of your tables with whiteboard material. That would be cool. Or, hey, a bar. I'll tell you what, if there's a bar that has its bar made out of whiteboard, I would probably quote unquote work there a lot because I'd be at the bar.
It'd be the whiteboard lounge.
Done. All right, so I got to make a ton of money so I can open up the whiteboard lounge. You're welcome to be a partner in it. It was all your ideas.
Sign me up. I'm in. I may never stop writing on stuff, but I'm in.
No, that's cool. You will just be like, oh, that's Ryan over there. He's kind of doing a beautiful mind sort of thing just on his whiteboard. It's all good.
It's kind of like that. In my day job, there are, if I'm in a room with a whiteboard and people are talking about something that I don't understand or am not catching on to quickly, I get really antsy. I just want to jump up in front of the whiteboard and say, okay, stop what you're saying. Let's draw this thing out so I can visualize what it is that you're talking about.
So that actually makes me go back to my early career. So I got my start running a Cutco office and teaching kids how to sell knives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so big chunks of my week, probably about 25 to 30 hours of my week, was spent either in group interviews or training in groups and running sales meetings. We'd always have these big whiteboards, and you could always tell if it was a really successful office by how big the whiteboard was. Like when we found the 6-foot by 8-foot whiteboards, that's when you know you were balling.
Yeah.
And I actually learned how to write backwards. Like I could face the room and actually write kind of over my shoulder.
That is talented. I am not anywhere near there.
That's probably a good thing.
I can barely type, so writing backwards on a whiteboard would be like a super skill level for me.
Well, also understand, I didn't say I could write legibly, and it would definitely be at an angle, but, it looks cool, or I thought it looked cool.
It's probably like you were at a whiteboard lounge.
I'm loving this. That was the reason we talked today, just for that very simple idea. We can actually stop the conversation right here.
All right. Well, thanks, Evan. Go back to your dream day now.
Well, hey, you know, you mentioned this a moment ago, working on your podcast. So we actually got a chance to meet because I was on one of your podcasts.
Yes, you were. One of my more popular episodes, too, by the way.
Ooh, very cool. So your podcast really is around the idea of personal brand, about, you know, how we're communicating professionally these days. So I actually have a little more serious of a question besides just your love of whiteboards. Why do you think that some people love the idea of a personal brand and other people, like, hate it, like, have a visceral reaction against the idea of a personal brand? Like, whenever you talk about it, they just go, they cringe. Why do you think that is?
People fall into two camps. You either get it or you don't.
Mm.
And the people that don't get it are the ones who will have that visceral reaction. They're the ones who believe that it's just a big marketing thing. It's fake. It doesn't exist. It's not real.
Okay.
And they're the ones, sadly, who will suffer for not understanding it, because everybody listening, even the people who are listening to this podcast right now, we all have a personal brand. And the question becomes whether you want to acknowledge it and use it to your advantage and help it make you grow personally and professionally, or do you want to continue to say, no, I don't have one, I think that stuff's all made up? So let me give your listeners a perfect example of how they can realize that they have a personal brand. If I need all of them to close their eyes, unless they're driving, don't do that. That'd be bad.
Yes, please don't. Don't be responsible for any traffic fatalities.
Picture yourself in a conference room. All your coworkers are sitting around a conference room table with you. And you're all talking about the latest project, or, you know, what you had for dinner last night, or whatever it might be. The door suddenly opens to this conference room, and in walks a senior leader, unannounced, who walks in and sits down. What happens to the mood of that conference room? Does it suddenly get quiet and get very serious? Or does it remain the same? And people look over and go, hey, how you doing? Welcome. And they just keep carrying on their conversation. What happens in that moment in time is that person, that senior leader, it's their personal brand. They've brought it into the room, and everybody knows it, and they recognize it, and they understand now how they have to behave around that person.
Nice. I would actually even say that there's some leaders, to extend your, I don't know if this is an allegory or a metaphor, just an example, there's those leaders that would walk in where actually the room would, there'd be an uptick, right, where the energy would actually increase.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Now, take the same example. Same conference room. Your coworkers are now sitting around the conference room, and they're at the table, and they're talking about projects or whatever, you know, what they had for dinner and all that. Now the door opens, and you walk in. What happens to the room now? And the answer to the question is your personal brand. It's and your brand is what people think about you when you're not around. I think Jeff Bezos is the first one who said that. It's also the brand that people experience from you through interaction over time. So we all have it. And the question is whether you want to recognize it, acknowledge it, and understand that you have it to use it to your advantage, or do you want to ignore it? And the people who choose to ignore it just don't get it. They don't understand.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they don't get it? I mean, I have my opinions, but I want to know what yours are.
You know, I think some people, these are the same people who don't want to be on, you know, social media or LinkedIn. You know, they just deny that this stuff exists. And we live in this world where, you know, I actually just did an interview with Taylor Pearson, who wrote the book called The End of Jobs, which, if none of your listeners have, or if any of your listeners haven't read this book, I highly recommend you go read this book. Taylor explains what is going on in the economy in a broader view, which is we're moving from kind of this knowledge-based economy to now an entrepreneurial economy.
Sure.
And business and career and jobs are going to be one based on what people find out about you online and the brand that precedes you. And,
yep.
And the people who just don't want to get online, they don't want to put themselves out there. And I think this is part of it. Some people are really hesitant to put themselves online. And they don't want to do it because they're afraid of ramifications that live in their mind.
Yep.
Instead of what actually happens in reality. I just interviewed a gentleman this morning. He actually is a career guy who integrates IT with recruitment. And he told me this morning, as have several of my guests,
it's actually worse for you to not be found today during a search online than it is for somebody to find very little about you. And I think people just don't want to do the work or the effort that it takes now to get themselves out there and to get their brand exposed. And so it's easier for them to say, well, that stuff's all just hooey.
Sure. Right. And it's funny because if you think about it, if I couldn't find you online, you don't exist.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, that's the way it's becoming. That is the way it is absolutely becoming these days.
And one of the things I think actually has a really big impact on this too, you mentioned, you know, people don't want to put the work into it and there's this fear of change and just the effort. I mean, we are obviously going through just a huge evolution in how we interact as a society. But I wonder if part of it too is kind of going to a personal level, there's almost an insecurity or a lack of confidence in ourselves. Like I find sometimes people who don't think a personal brand is important are also the ones who wouldn't feel comfortable standing up and talking about themselves. And it's like they've been told not to.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then they dismiss it.
Definitely. That's something that, like, especially my generation. So I'm a Gen X, and you know, my generation was raised by the career success formula that my parents gave us, which was go to school, get good grades, go to college, get a job, and you stay at that one job and you live there happily ever after.
Right.
That just doesn't happen anymore. And there are still people who, even though they can see this taking place in the broader world, they don't want to admit it to themselves. And they don't want to acknowledge that things are changing and that you must change with them. And so one of the easiest things for them to do is, you know, to throw stuff at the dartboard of personal branding and say, that stuff's not for me.
Sure. Right. No, it doesn't work.
Right, right. And you know what? Hey, that's okay. I'm not going to waste my time. I'm not going to spend my time trying to convince you. I would just go get the jobs that you won't be able to get because I took the time to build up my brand and my recognition and grow my online reputation when you didn't.
Right. I mean, that's one thing that comes up a lot when I talk to audiences or even individuals about LinkedIn. And there's a lot of people just like, oh, LinkedIn is stupid. I was actually talking to a pretty big sales trainer, and he was like, yeah, social selling it's overhyped. It's not really important. And I just think, I'm like, the first thing I do before I talk to anybody is I look them up online.
Yep.
And there's absolute people who I've been like, nope, I am not going to interact with you because you're not impressing me. And there's so many other people I could interact with.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, who do you want to spend your time with? Do you want to spend your time with somebody who gets it, or do you want to spend your time with somebody who you have to convince?
Right. So what do you think people are getting wrong about personal brand right now? So let's take that camp of people who get it, mm-hmm. right? Who are on board. They're like, okay, this is an important thing. I'm going to spend some time and energy here. You know, because you talk about this a lot on your podcast, so you're really kind of plugged into this. What are people getting wrong, do you think?
I don't know if they're getting it wrong so much as they just don't understand how to go about it, right? So the biggest thing is, where do I start? What do I do? There's so many things that you could go do. And,
sure.
And so where do you get started? And I actually have created a process, and this is a process that's over 2 years in the making, that I now refer to as DICE.
Okay.
Which is a personal branding process that I use and I walk clients through, and it starts with discovery, integration, then creation, and engagement.
Sweet.
And people want to go skip immediately to engagement, right? They just want to go and get on social media. They sign up for all these accounts. They last a day, a week, a month, an hour. And then they go, I don't get it. I'm done. And the reason why they did that is because they did not follow the process and start at the beginning. And they did not take the time to discover what their personal brand really is. What are they good at? What are their natural skills, their abilities? What are their strengths? And then once you know that stuff, you can start to ask the question, what do you want to be known for? When people Sure. find you online, what do you want them to see? Somebody put it in a great terms the other day. I don't remember who it was that I was talking to or listening to on a podcast, but they said, if you were going to go on the Oprah Winfrey show, what would you want Oprah to introduce you as being the person who knows more than anybody else? David Fisher knows blank. He's an expert at blank. What is that you want to be known for? Once you know that, then you can start to integrate your offline self into your online world, and you'll be able to select the right social media accounts. The ones where your people, if you will, hang out and where they gather, and you can engage and you can get into the conversation that way. And then from there, you can create content around this thing that you want Oprah to introduce you as being the expert of, so that people can start to either like what you say or not like what you say, right? So
right.
Discover and integrate, which is understanding your offline brand, combining it with your online personality. Those two are steps to help people get to know you. Then when you move into creation, you're now putting out content and putting your thoughts, your thought process online, and people can understand whether I like you or not.
Right.
Right. And then once you put out enough content, you start to begin to get permission to engage with people. And it's through the engagement that you'll build up that trust.
I like it. That's awesome. That's a good process.
So not that you
need my validation, but I like it.
Well, thanks. I like to think it is too. But it makes logical sense to me. You have to go in the right order. You can't just skip to the end, because if you do, you might be successful for a very short period of time, but you personally will fizzle out and burn out, because you'll start going, what am I doing all this stuff for?
Right.
Because you didn't take the time to figure it out to begin with. And so it's not so much I think people get it wrong. I think they just get confused on where to start.
Interesting. You know, as you're going through that process, one thing that I see a lot too, in especially you talk about content creation as a way to distribute and share your message, and then this idea of engagement. And maybe you've experienced this, I know I have, where you've met people who have been very prolific online in creating this brand,
mm-hmm.
and then you engage with them, and there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
They're not the same person.
Yep.
And so I think your idea of kind of creating that discovery is so important, because then you can actually be authentic the whole way through.
Right. I mean, let's be real, right? It's online. I could create a persona that I was a rock star if I wanted to, right? I could have pictures on a website of me with a guitar, maybe on stage with a guitar. I could come up with all kinds of stuff online to make people who've never met me believe that I'm a rock star. Until they meet me in person and say, dude, there's a guitar in the corner, go play us a riff. Now I can't do it, right?
Right.
So you come across as very disingenuous, and immediately you will break people's trust, and they will move on to somebody else. And, you know, personal branding and the whole DICE process is all about, let's discover our brand so that when we go online, we're true to ourselves, and I think the word authentic gets used, maybe overused, but it's
absolutely.
But it's true. You want people to know you. I mean, like, I have expectations when you and I meet in person. I have expectations of what that meeting's going to be like, and I'm sure you have the same for me. And if it turns out to be something different, you know, both of us are going to go, whoa, that was really weird. That, you know, and the trust gets broken.
Yep.
And so you have to understand that part of the process, and you got to be true to it.
Well, and I always talk about congruity.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, you got to be congruent, absolutely, in everything you do.
And it's funny, because I think sometimes people think when they're creating their personal brand, mm-hmm. that it has to be metaphorically a rock star brand, right? That's why I think some people do get a little gun shy with social media. For example, they just go, oh, you know, it's just people wanting to post that they're hanging out with these cool people and these parties, and, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it, like somebody that we know goes to a conference and all of a sudden they're just posting all these pictures with, you know, this quote-unquote celebrities. And you're like, hey, I know that's not really who you are.
Have you been looking at my Instagram account?
Oh, you have an Instagram account? I don't have an Instagram account. I'm comfortable sharing that, right? You know, and I tell people all the time, like somebody like me who talks about social media all the time. I mean, I don't talk just about social media. I talk about LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I talk about professional brand. And so people go, oh, are you on, you know, Instagram? I go, no, because I'm not that pretty. I don't want to take selfies of me or the food I'm eating.
But
and,
that's the thing is you have to be true to yourself. You got to be true to who you
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
And if you went out and created an Instagram account just because people were telling you to, two things would happen. One, you would just start posting stuff that was probably not congruent to what you wanted just so you could get content out there. But more importantly, eventually you're going to get bored with it, and it's not going to feel right to you, and you're going to abandon it. And yep. So now you're going to have, you know, if that's one of the accounts, now you end up with all these different accounts out there that are partially done and done poorly, and they're not congruent to who you really are. So people don't know what to think about that.
Exactly. And by the way, I wasn't dismissing Instagram, because I actually know people who are on Instagram, yeah. And it's a fantastic platform. They love it. They share really cool stuff. But I want to touch on something else you just talked about, because I know this has taken you a little while to create this concept. But part of that is because, in some ways, this is your side hustle right now, right? I know that you mentioned your day job. We talk about side hustles these days, and there's a lot out there, and always seems so sexy. Oh, yeah, I've got this really cool side job, where you get to say, hey, I'm a podcaster. You run this awesome podcast. You're a personal branding expert. What has been, on that journey, the coolest part about that journey, and what has been the biggest surprise as far as the challenge of kind of journey and really embracing a side hustle?
Some of the biggest challenges with the side hustle, there's two. One is balance.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the balance between work, my day job, my family, and having time to do this side hustle. That's difficult. You know, when I do podcasts, I try to keep my interviews to the evenings and or the weekends. But occasionally I'll have a guest who can't do that. And so I'll have to take a vacation day or a vacation afternoon.
Sure.
To be able to work in that person. And so there's, you know, and I can't just, well, now I can because my company just changed our vacation day policy. But before I had a set number of vacation days that I could take, you know, and if I was taking a vacation day to meet with a podcast guest, that was one vacation day that I couldn't use to be with my family. You know, so there's this balance that you have to work out, and you won't get it right. I mean, I still don't get it right, but I try. We try every day. And then once you start to get a feel for how it works, then you run into this other thing called prioritization.
Sure.
Because there's so many things, especially with the side hustle, there's so many things you could do. And what you'd need to do is focus on just the things that matter, that help move the needle. And, you know, it's a constant battle, but it's one that I'm getting better at the longer this journey goes, and the more that I continue to move down this path.
That's cool. I was reading a book recently. It's called Improv Wisdom. Mm-hmm. And a really interesting book about, you know, kind of using the skills of improvisation in life. And there's a quote in there, and I don't know who the quote's from, but it was really interesting. It's not about having a life that's balanced, but rather it's about balancing,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not about trying to figure out that perfect spot and then having it be static. But kind of what you said, it's like everything's changing and moving, mm-hmm. right? And so you just kind of maybe shift the priorities on a day-to-day basis even sometimes.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Sometimes, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but hourly. You know, my wife and I, our communication has to be really good. Every night we have to talk about, okay, what are we doing tomorrow? And then in the morning I usually get up and say, okay, what are we doing today again? You know, because it can change.
Sure.
And also because I have a bad memory. But I do ask the question often, and we communicate. I mean, I have a calendar that sits in my home office here that is nothing but podcast-related stuff. So
sure.
If I have a guest scheduled, it gets written on this, you know, so we have an electronic one that's on our phones, but I also have a manual one that I keep with pencil.
I love it.
You know, and then I've got my vacation days highlighted on there so that I know as I look at this calendar beside my desk here, if I need to do podcast guests, get a show done during a vacation week, well, I've got to get them scheduled before. I got to have time to edit. And so I'm back to the visual thing for me, right? It just helps
yep.
me see what I need to do. And then when I, you know, my wife's gotten to the point now where she puts anything that my boys are doing, it goes in the calendar. So I know, I know I can look at my day to day and I can see, you know, at a certain time I need to either make time to go to this event with my son, or I need to make arrangements with my wife to make sure she gets him there.
If it's not on the, you know, I'm the oldest of five kids, and we always laugh because my mom had a calendar like that. And if it wasn't on the calendar, it didn't exist.
Yeah, and that's the way that I think it really, really needs to be that way. Like tomorrow, I have, and as I do every Saturday morning, I have the calendar blocked off for me to edit podcasts. And so everybody knows that's what Dad does on Saturday mornings is he edits podcasts.
And they leave you alone?
Yeah.
Nice. That's some great training that you've done right there.
Well, it's easy to do when you put the cans on your head and you just stare at the screen.
Do you lock the door? You're like, I can't hear you.
The door is shut, and I do have a push-button lock on the door that only my wife and I know the code to, so that helps.
I like it. All right. Well, hey. I want to make sure that we talk about this topic. You just mentioned prioritization. This is so important. I know you're a gamer like I am.
Yep.
All right. So we didn't really get a chance to talk about this when I was on your podcast. And gosh darn it, with a podcast called Beer Beats and Business, you know we got to talk about some gaming. What are you playing right now?
The last game that I played was Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
How'd you like it?
I really like it. I like those kind of games where you have to kind of, you know, you kind of got to think and, you know, put one plus one together to come up with two. I enjoy the charge out and just shoot people games, but I also really like the games where you have to kind of think things through. So prior to that, I was playing Batman, the latest one. I think it was Arkham City. I don't remember.
Arkham City, Arkham Asylum. I think they're going to come out with Arkham Zoo.
Yeah, one of those. Next. But I really like that one, too, because there's a Riddler part where you have to solve puzzles and things like that. So I enjoy the games where they're my son says they're too intellectual for him.
Right. Well, hey, we came up, you know, and it's funny because if you think about gamers, you know, our age, like we've been doing this for a long time, right? Yeah. I don't know about you, but I didn't really have a good experience with what it was called, girlfriends in high school, because I was like, well, I could play, you know, video games all night, or I could go out and try to, you know, talk to girls at the mall, and video games seemed a much better use of my time.
Yeah, well, you know, my Vic 20 and I had a pretty good relationship when I was growing up. My Commodore Vic 20.
Going old school.
Yeah.
For you, what do games provide? I'm just curious. Like, you know, you talked about kind of having that intellectual stimulation, obviously, in your day job and your side hustle, you get a lot of that already.
Yeah.
What is it for you?
A total escape from everything, right? I mean, when I play them, I am totally immersed in the game. And, I mean, nothing else for that hour is around me. I am in that world. I am living that character. I am, you know, everything else, all the other stuff is gone for a little while. So for me, it's a true way to escape. Because even my thoughts are focused on the game. You know, I'm learning to just go sit and be still. But even when I do that, my thoughts always go to one of the three subjects, right? It's work, it's side hustle, or it's something to do with the family. But when I sit and I play a video game, I am totally immersed, and all of my thoughts are around, how do I beat this bad guy?
Right. I'm sure your wife likes that sometimes when she comes and she's like, no, I actually need you. And you're like, I got no brain space for you.
Like, well, can you wait until the next automatic save? And then we're good. I'll come help you.
Again, I'm only laughing because I've been there and I've done that. See, I kind of like it because I'm right with you. It's that chance to kind of escape. Like even watching TV or a movie, that never really does it for me because you don't really need a lot of brain space to pay attention to what's on the screen.
No.
I think for me, and you know, one thing in running your own business, and I've you know, been doing that over 10 years now, there's not a lot of milestones in running your own show sometimes. Like, it sounds like there is, but it's really hard when you just mentioned this idea of there's always something to do,
right,
for the side hustle. Like, I wake up every morning, and it's funny, my fiance will ask me at the end of the day, like, how'd the day go? And I'm like, I think it went well. I think I got a lot of stuff done, but I could show you what else I could still do.
Yeah.
And for me, I think one of the things and this is actually just a realization in the last couple months, is that I love that, hey, I just hit level 20.
Nice.
Right? Great. Or, hey, you know, I did just get that bad guy.
Yeah.
And you can just check the box.
You can.
It's so validating when you don't always get that in the real world.
Wouldn't it be nice if work was like that? You know, you if you want to get promoted, you need to get to level 20.
Right.
And here's all the things that you have to do to get there.
Every time you have a good conversation with one of your coworkers, you just get see this little plus five XP kind of rise above their head.
That would be sweet. I mean, if you think about it, there's a lot of parallels between video games and just real life, and especially with careers. I mean, everybody, if you think about how a game starts, it starts at a point where you really don't know what you're doing. But there's an end point to the game. It does end. And there's a journey from where you start to where you end. Now, along the way, you don't have to take a straight path. You don't have to just play the main storyline. Generally, games have all kinds of side tasks and side ventures that you can go do. And why do you do those things? You do those things so that you can gain experience and you can gain skills. And then those experience and skills gain you, you know, awards or levels so that when you return back to the main path, to whatever your goal might be, you're stronger at it, you're better at it, and probably as a person, you're better for it.
Right.
And so there's just a lot of parallels, I think, between the two. In fact, there's a guy named John D. Harrison, who wrote a book called Master the Game. And it's all about how video games teach you leadership. And he and I have some really fun conversations about what video games we're playing and how they relate to leadership. So think about that for a while.
No, I absolutely believe you. In fact, I've often thought, so I got my start PC gaming again when I was that lonely 14-year-old boy. But I loved games like SimCity and Civilization, all those things.
Yeah.
And I realized that it actually kind of mirrors my approach to life in some ways, because I'm very much an investor, right? I'm like, okay, I'm going to like learn how, I'm going to educate myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, build my skills, you know, build my abilities, and then I'm going to go out and do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I approach life. And so it's really interesting to see kind of those parallels. One thing I've often thought, though, is I think people do take the gamification concept too far, because the one thing that's different, I love the idea of approaching, you know, business, like you just said, or your career, like a video game. But I always think the one thing that's different that we have to remember is that a video game is always a contained system, right?
Yep.
There are things that will help, things that will hurt. There's very set objectives. And I've yet to meet somebody who truly has a life where everything is that
right,
cut and dried, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, another thing about, and this is kind of another parallel to careers, but it's not true anymore, and it used to be. You know, when you start certain games, you have to choose, I want to be an elf, or I want to be a goblin, or I want
right.
to be, you know, and whatever you choose, that's what you have to be till the end of the game. And so, and that used to be the way people, they went to school, and they said, I'm going to be an engineer. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. And that used to be the norm. And now with the changes, the internet and the changes in the economy and the birth, if you will, of really true entrepreneurship where it's open and available to all of us, you don't have to be that elf or that goblin anymore. You can change midway through the game.
So I don't want to dive too deep into this because then we'll just spend another hour talking about it. But so here's an interesting question of, is it art that imitates life or life that imitates art? Because I was playing the beta for The Division.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about
this coming
one.
Out.
Yeah.
And it was okay. It was okay. I want to see the full game before I pass judgment. But what's really interesting is that you see this, not only The Division, but a lot of games out there now, where you don't have a set skill tree, right? You can actually change within the moment all of your abilities and skills and different attributes. To your point, it's not like you just are along one path forever.
Right.
And so I wonder if that's, again, art imitating how we're living our life, or our life kind of starting to go, hey, well, games allow us to not have to be so set in our ways. So it's more of an open decision tree.
Right.
Can we make our life like that?
Yeah, and you can. The tools of production that were once expensive and limited to big corporations are now available to us, and they're very inexpensive. I mean, you self-published a book, right?
I self-published five of them.
So think about trying to do that 15 years ago.
Oh, impossible.
Right. And so you would have had to pick a route that said you can't be an author unless you have a certain amount of money.
Yep.
But because we live in this day and age where these tools of production are so inexpensive and readily available, you can change now. And we're all better. The world is going to be better off for it.
Absolutely. I totally agree. By the way, do you, when you're doing your podcast mixing and editing on Saturday mornings, do you ever put those, and I love that you call them cans. For those of you who weren't picking up on that, that's kind of like the geeky way of saying headphones.
The big ones, not the small little white earbuds I'm wearing now, the big cans.
Yeah, no,
the Princess
Leia
buns on the side of my ears.
Yeah, if you're listening, think the DJ in the DJ booth. They wear cans.
Yeah.
So do you ever think like you're a top record producer? Do you ever just like, you know, make believe that you're like the man? Just
so you know, I think more than that, when I am editing, I look at myself as a storyteller.
Okay.
And I try to figure out what's the best way to tell the story that my guest is trying to tell, and in the most succinct way. And then more importantly, how can I make sure that when people listen to this, especially my guests, I want them to say, man, you made me sound really good. And so I'm always thinking about how can I make my guests sound better and how can I use the sound bites and snippets so that it tells a succinct story from beginning to end. And then sometimes I will allow myself to pretend like I work for Gimlet Media. And Alex Bloomberg is standing over my shoulder going, we got to get the startup podcast out. Edit.
Are you drinking a vodka gimlet right there on the side just to, like, really dive into the fantasy?
Well, no, because it's Saturday mornings, but I make sure that I partake in the evenings for sure.
Okay. Well, there's an old Irish saying, it's always after 5 o'clock somewhere in the world.
That is true.
Well, I don't think I'm going to have to do a lot of work trying to make you sound good because we could keep talking forever. But my last question for you here.
Yep.
If you could give someone a tip to make today a little better for them, what would it be?
You are never too old to start. Whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, just because you've been doing one thing for so long doesn't mean that you can't start doing something else. I had a guest on my show. His name is Joseph Michael, really smart and wise guy for his age. And he gave the quote during our discussion, and I love it. It's absolutely fantastic. But whatever that thing is that you think you want to go do, let's say it's you want to create a podcast, and it's going to take you a full year to do the podcast. If you wait a year, whatever that thing is that you want to do, if you wait another year, it's still going to take you a year to do it. So don't put yourself in a position where a year from now, you look back and you say, man, I wish I would have done that. Instead, put yourself in a position where you look back a year from now and you say, I'm glad I did that. You're never too late. It's never too late to start.
Absolutely love it. Fantastic. Ryan, thanks so much for being on today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I had fun. I'll meet you at the Whiteboard Lounge here in about 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
Thanks for stopping by today and listening in. You can find show notes and links for this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes or any of your favorite podcasting services. If you have feedback, leave DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And of course, we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
I'm DFish. Thanks for joining us today. I think you hit it right on the head. It's not, you know, congruent with my authentic self.
Right.
I want to throw as many buzzwords in there as possible.
There you go.
So
good job.
I think we hit that.